Okay. Welcome, everyone, on this early Sunday morning. yesterday, was it yesterday? I think so. A couple of lovely and well-dressed fellows came to my door with a pamphlet and invited me to the commemoration of the death of Jesus Christ. And I said thank you and took it and went back in. I didn't even have a chance to invite him here. It went so fast. But this time of year always makes me think of my upbringing. I was a Catholic, raised Catholic, and quite religious, even as a young person. I was an altar girl. That's shocking. Guess I'm still an altar girl. I really enjoyed a lot of things about the Catholic Church and a lot of the things that I enjoyed about it. We do here, are part of this tradition, a lot of the rites and rituals. I don't think it's a coincidence that I feel at home in this particular tradition. I quite loved the candles and the incense and the community and the weekly gatherings and the fellowship afterwards and all the things. I liked having a home away from home and a place where my family fit in. And I went through all the sacraments, as a kid. But this time of year is special. Lent is this time when you sort of entered into this period of renunciation. Again, I kind of love it. I love sort of testing myself and giving up something I really liked and, doing it with my family, carrying that kind of quiet bit of giving up around with me. I didn't go to Catholic schools or anything like that, so it was just what I was doing with my family and what we were doing at church, but it wasn't a part of my normal day-to-day life in school or anything like that. But I'd usually give up chocolate or something and then meat on Fridays, and this might be sounding familiar to some of you. And it was very normal, very and something that I looked forward to every year, this kind of special period. Much of the rest of the time in the Catholic sort of calendar is referred to as ordinary time, which now I love. Like, oh, is it ordinary time yet? Like, will it ever feel like ordinary time? But when I was a kid, it was kind of there was this real distinction between ordinary time and something more special. And one of the most special things that I did as a young person in the church was when I got to be an altar girl for the what they call the Passion of Jesus, this story of the last days of Jesus's life. And like in most Catholic churches, there's kind of these this iconography depicting all of these events, the Last Supper and the betrayals and the three times that Jesus fell down. You're starting to wonder where are you right now? Wait. Which church did I wander into this? I swear. You're in the right, you've come to the right place. Now I'm really getting into this. The memories, are very strong. And so, in this particular ceremony, I'd carry either a candle or incense or something around, or maybe the cross around the room. And the group that was walking around the room would stop at each one, and there was a prayer and a reading, and it went on for a couple hours or something like that. It was quite a ceremony, the passion also meant, suffering, endurance, all of this. And I really do think that that was one of the things that kept me quite tied to the Catholic Church, the rites, the rituals, the community, and then the passion, the sort of evoking of suffering. And what's interesting, of course, about this framework is that is flipped on its head. Now, in this framework, well, actually, what we're taught to cultivate, among many, many other things, is dispassion. Viraga. So, raga in Pali is passion, and viraga is dispassion. One of the important pieces of this particular framework, this particular practice, is to let go of what we're passionate about. Mostly because it creates division, creates distraction, creates sort of this movement toward and pushing away when our passions run high, run strong, we tend to dig into our views and hold them really tightly. So the Buddha taught over and over and over cultivating dispassion. And that is sort of misheld sometimes. It's misinterpreted sometimes. Oh, what am I just supposed to be? This dull, a boring, straight-faced person. And of course, in my experience, no. That isn't the result of developing dispassion. The result of developing dispassion is a bright, selfless, awareness and the ability to be with conditions just as they are. So that's really quite beautiful, isn't it? Now, the reason that I remember, all of this stuff from my upbringing in the Catholic Church was because it was meant to evoke emotion, and when we evoke emotion, we remember what's going on. It becomes really cemented, and embodied in our hearts and our minds. It's a great tool, as are rites and rituals. But in this framework, we're actually taught, to use these things while we need them, and then to ultimately let them go. These flowers, look at this. Evan and Soren brought these flowers. I talk about being attached and passionate. I wish I was facing that way, no offense, but they're just gorgeous, these flowers. And that's a ritual here, isn't it? A convention. We put flowers on the altar, we light incense, we light candles, and all of that helps us remember what we're doing here. As soon as you walk in, you smell it. Even if you haven't been here for years, the smell is the same, The Buddha is familiar. The candles have this kind of celebratory, sense to them. And if you have an altar at home, that's one of the best reasons to have an altar at home, isn't it? To remind us to be reverent, to sit down, to do our meditation. You walk past, you can only walk past it so many times before you remember to sit. That's what it's for. These rites and rituals. We do this kind of chant at the beginning of every service, and we do the same things every week when you come here. And all of that is in the service of building mindfulness, building memory, building muscle memory, embodying this. But ultimately, the practice is to sit down and be with things just as they are. So if the incense is gone, we still have our meditation. We still have our practice. If the candles are gone, if the Buddha is gone, if the leader is gone, if the community is gone, we still have our practice. The Dhamma is timeless, It's not connected to any particular conditions. It has to be embodied. Practicing the Dhamma is an inside job. I was listening to a talk from Longpo Pasana recently, and I love his little turns of phrase, and then he laughs, just so you know. there's a lighthearted but serious kind of thing going on here, he said. He said, yeah, it's great when other people are practicing, but it's really important that you do it, that we do it. It's great when other people are in on it, but it's really important that we do it. And he was saying, that was his way of saying, all of this doesn't equal this. It's just helping. It's just helping. And the same with passion. Enthusiasm. There's this, there's desire, tanha, which is kind of an unwholesome desire, the desire for sensory stuff, sense pleasures, becoming, the desire to get away from things. And that's something that we're training the mind to let go of. But there's this other sort of, a wholesome desire, chanda, which is the zeal, the enthusiasm to pick this up and practice. So not all passion is bad, not all desire is wrong, unskillful. We take what we need to get the energy and the motivation to practice, and then set it down later. Have all of this, but it's of course in a state of decay, isn't it, Kristen? We only have this building as long as we have it. We only have these friends as long as we have them. We only have this body as long as we have it. But the Dhamma is timeless. The Dhamma is unconditioned. So practicing no matter what is what the Buddha taught. I remember years ago, two buildings ago. So before we were here, we were at this lovely church in Selwood, and before that, we were in the small art studio in Industrial Northwest. And I had only been coming a couple months or something—I don't remember—and Sakula, who's the spiritual director and founder of this center, she asked me to open up for her. So, she must have known I was reliable. And she gave me the keys to the the art studio, but she did not give me the keys to the closet that had the Buddha or anything else in it. And here I was. I'd been, practicing for like weeks, literally. And all I knew was you sit down and look at the Buddha. That was the whole thing. Like, you just sit down and look at the Buddha. Before that, I had been sitting at the Zen Center. You sit down and look at the rocks. Like, but so I got there and I opened up, and this other fellow who I sat with regularly at that time, he was older than me and wiser, of course. And he was like, I was panicking. Well, we don't have the Buddha. How are we going to do this if we don't have the Buddha? But what are people going to think? How am I supposed to sit? What are we going to do? And he said, well, you don't need the Buddha. Don't think I believed him. And I don't, and what's funny is that I don't remember if we ultimately got into that cupboard or not. There might have been a way in. I don't actually remember what was next. What I remember was my panic about not having it, not having this thing. But of course, our teachers, the monastics, remind us, this is not the Buddha. This is a statue. It's a Buddha Rupa, which means like Buddha body, a likeness of the Buddha. The Buddha is here. The Buddha represents a potential for awakening. The Dhamma represents the reality of our conditions. The Sangha represents people who are practicing in an enthusiastic and sincere way. Don't rely on this Buddha. It's never going to change. He's never going to get up and walk away. He's probably never going to fall into just, I don't know how long this thing is going to last, but it feels pretty permanent. But the reality is it isn't. It's just a reminder. So in, creating, developing dispassion, we don't fall away from who we are. We don't fall away from our personalities. I like to say if I could have had a personality transplant by now, I would have. Doesn't change. Doing this practice and doing it well and doing it seriously, in my experience, just makes us a bright, selfless, aware version of who we already were. So it's worth it. It's worth it to look into that, letting go, that setting down emotional content when we can, staying balanced in the face of our conditions. Having compassion without suffering with the suffering that we see.